All right, we are in Matthew, the second chapter. And I'll ask again, just the case. Jim, did you get the introductory packet last week?
Yes. Okay.
All right, so everybody has the introductory packet. We are actually on the final page of the introductory packet, which is chapter 2. We gave that to you last week. And the handout that I'm giving you today is for the third chapter. So that will be for next week. So if you will, turn in your New Testament, Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2. We're going to be talking about the birth of our Lord. Of course, that latter part of chapter 1 actually states that. So what we're actually talking about is a period of time somewhere between his birth and the age of 2, as we'll talk about. But the early life of Jesus as wise men come from the east. And then after that, the quick trip, quick in the sense that they left immediately to go to Egypt, Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, to Egypt to avoid Herod. And then finally, the trip back to Judea, which was diverted to go to Galilee, where they stayed in Nazareth, which is where Jesus was raised. All of that's contained in the second chapter. We're going to talk about certain aspects of that in our lesson tonight. Okay, what we have before us, as we talked about last week, is basically a study guide to help us quickly cover, in kind of a survey form, a chapter each week. And you'll notice the outline at the top of the page has three bullet points. Wise men from the east seek Jesus. Joseph takes Mary and Jesus to Egypt to avoid Herod. And I put, as a part of that, Herod's response, which was the murdering of the children in Bethlehem. And then the third bullet point is Joseph taking Mary and Jesus to live in Nazareth. So this is basically the three sections that we're going to study. So in the material that we find after the outline of the locations, people, events, and miracles for the purpose of our study, we're going to kind of go chronologically with regard to the outline itself, and we'll intersperse our comments about each of those people or locations or the events that that took place as we go through the study of that text. And we'll be doing the same basic thing each week as we come together to study. So I would like to begin by asking someone, if they will, to read the first 12 verses. Matthew chapter 2 and verses 1 through 12. Who would be willing to do that for me? Thank you, Dennis. Appreciate it.
Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the young child, and when you have found him, bring him back word to me, that I may come and worship him also." When they heard the king, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Then, being divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed for their own country another way.
Okay. All right, so let's start by making note of a couple of the events and individuals that make up this particular narrative. First of all, we talked last week about the city of Bethlehem, or the town of Bethlehem. Two things to note: it was a small town that was about 5 miles away from Jerusalem. So when Herod sent the wise men from Jerusalem to go to Bethlehem to find the young child, he only sent them a short distance away. It wasn't far. And the second is that that Bethlehem was prophesied to be the birthplace of Jesus, and we read that text from Micah, the fifth chapter, and verse 2 in our study last week. And so this was, though you are the least among in Israel, yet out of you shall be born and the Messiah. And so that's the prophecy that was given there in Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. The other town, which we're not going to spend much time in talking about Jerusalem, because everyone knows about the city of Jerusalem, and we'll have an opportunity as we go through Matthew, we'll be revisiting the place, and we'll talk more about the temple, and we'll talk more about the government and other things when we get to those particular chapters. But we are familiar with the fact that Jerusalem was the capital city of Judea and Israel at large, and the most important and holy city in the nation still to be, even today, in the thinking of the Jews. And it was the location of the temple. And just wanted to make note of the fact that Herod, which is mentioned here in this particular text, Herod the Great, is the individual who, about 15 to 20 years before Jesus was born, rebuilt the temple. You'll remember that when the remnant came back from Babylonian captivity and built the temple, that there was some sadness on the part of those who remembered the previous temple, because it was not as large and as glorious as Solomon's temple was. Herod's intent, perhaps it was to appease the people, but more probably it was a matter of ego, was to rebuild Solomon's temple in all its glory. And so the temple that existed in the day of Jesus, the temple itself was the same size as Solomon's temple, but the building continued throughout Jesus' lifetime, and even three decades following Jesus' lifetime. It said that the temple structure with the outer courts and all the environs surrounding it was a pretty amazing place that was finally completed about AD 60 and lasted for 10 years until it was destroyed in AD 70. So that's kind of an interesting thing to note there. But Jerusalem is where the temple was located and where Herod the Great ruled. So with those two locations in mind, and that pretty much ties in the first 12 verses as to where until they get into Egypt and Nazareth. The people that are under consideration here that I wanted to make note of is the wise men and Herod. So who are the wise men? That's a question that a lot of people have asked. And of course, the Catholics have names for them. Anybody remember what the Catholic names are? Because I don't remember. I know that they have been named, and of course they have been given a number, the number 3. There were 3 wise men. The reason for that is because there were 3 gifts that are specifically mentioned in verse 11. Since there are 3 gifts, there must have been 3 wise men, which of course is all speculation. In fact, in the Orthodox Church, Orthodox tradition, there were 12 wise men. But all of that is something that we cannot know. So there is not much that we know about these men, except for the fact that we're told they came from the east. Now, a couple of things in my study that I came across that were kind of interesting. The word, or the phrase, wise men, you've heard the magi. It's actually from the Greek word magos, M-A-G-O-S. And so, magi being the plural of that. And it was a name that was given by the Babylonians. And so, when he was restating this, doesn't necessarily mean that that's where they came from, but it was a name that was given to these individuals. And one that would be familiar at least to the Jews as a part of their tradition because of Daniel's involvement with them. I didn't write this down, so I would like someone to turn to Daniel chapter 5. Ian, would you turn to Daniel 5 and verse 11 and read it in just a few moments? I want to first give the definition of the Magi. It was a name given by the Babylonians and the Medes and the Persians to what they considered wise men. These would be teachers, they would be priests, they would be physicians, they would be astrologers, seers, interpreters of dreams, augurs, soothsayers, sorcerers, all of those who, even in their superstition, the kings would appeal to in order to divine some meaning or knowledge. And so these were the wise men. Not surprising, particularly then, that the idea of the star in the east would be something that would be noted by a group that was considered among the wise. But we don't know anything about them. We don't really know where they were from. We don't know their number. We don't know their nationalities. Some have inferred that they were kings, and there is absolutely no evidence of that. But again, in some religious traditions, they're referred to as 3 kings. And so all of that has no scriptural basis. One thing that is mentioned, though, is that Daniel, after being taken into captivity, after he interpreted the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, you remember he told him the dream, and then he interpreted the dream. As a result of that, Nebuchadnezzar was very much impressed with him. Now, if you will, read Daniel 5, verse 11.
There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, enchanters, Chaldeans, and astrologers.
Okay. So Daniel, for a period of time during the Babylonian, and perhaps he still maintained his influence, of course, during the Medo-Persian period of time in the capital, then he was the chief among the magi at that particular time. The reason I bring that up, and again, this is somewhat speculative, but it is an interesting point, is that the question is, how did the wise men know that there would be a star that would portend the coming of the Messiah, the King of the Jews? Because there is really no indication in the revealed scripture that we have. There are a couple of possibilities. Since we cannot find anywhere from Genesis to Malachi an indication of such a prophecy, then there are basically three possibilities. Daniel told them, because God revealed it to Daniel. They received some kind of revelation themselves from God to look for it. Or thirdly, they were able to divine it from their interpretation of the stars, which is basically sorcery. And although some people would say that that's an acceptable explanation, it really is one that I think has no validity at all. So it's either through some revelation from God directly to them, or perhaps through the tradition that they had received all the way back to the time of Daniel, that God had revealed it to Daniel and that had come. But we don't know for sure. I just wanted to make note of the interesting point that Daniel was the chief of the magi, or the wise men, and then these wise men from the east came. I don't even know if they were Babylonians or from that specific area in the east. We don't know that. But that's the only tie-in that possibly we can find in Scripture. Any questions about the wise men then? Okay. The only other individual that we want to make note of in this section is Herod. It's Herod the Great. He was referred to as Herod the Great, not as an indication of his character, but rather named Herod the Great because of his accomplishments in the building projects. The temple was one of them. It wasn't the only one. But Herod was actually not a well-respected king. He became king because Octavius Augustus proclaimed him king. And he was actually an Edomite and did not have the respect of the Jews, though he was titled the King of the Jews. And it's the indication is there's a possibility that one of the reasons why he built the temple was to try to ingratiate himself with the Jews. An interesting thing, though, Jews were afraid he was going to tear the temple down. And in order to make sure they understood that wasn't his intent, he got all of the materials together on site before he ever began the building of the new temple, so that they would understand that it wasn't his intent to destroy their place where they wouldn't have a place to worship, but rather to make it better. Doesn't mean he was a nice guy. It seems that it was more of political expediency to try to get them on his good side at least a bit. He reigned for 37 years, from 37 B.C. to 1 B.C. And by the way, that time is something that it depends upon your understanding of the actual calendar, and different ones would view it differently in regard to that. But Jesus was born just some time before Herod's death. As we see, he is an individual who is in charge, the king of Israel, king of Judea, at the time in which Jesus was born. Okay, next thing, the star. And this has always been something that's kind of peculiar. The star appeared sometime between the birth of Jesus. In fact, the indication, if we understand the narrative of Matthew, was that the star appeared when Jesus was born. Because you'll notice that Herod, he determined, verse 7, what time the star appeared. He wanted to know when it appeared. So that would seem to indicate that it appeared at the time that Jesus was born. When they told him what time the star appeared, then from that time forward, it was his decision to kill all of the children in Bethlehem And whether it's all the children or all the male children, the word male is actually not in the Greek, but it is a masculine pronoun. So it's probable all the male children. But that pronoun can be used with regard to, or that noun can be used with regard to, depending on context, children in general as well. But again, the idea is most probably the male children, because Jesus would have been male, or the Messiah would have been male. And that was 2 years and under. So we're not talking about this happening exactly at his birth, the wise men showing up when Jesus was still in the manger. Rather, this was a period of time within the first 2 years of his life that the star appeared. So, what was the star? It was a star, but understand this, that the word that is used there is indicative of a heavenly body, and was used to reference planets, meteorites, and comets, and so we don't know exactly the nature of this, other than it was miraculous. It was miraculous, and we can know that because this is what we know, and that's what we can emphasize, and the only thing we can emphasize. It appeared, chapter 2, verse 7. It rose. You'll notice chapter 2 and verse 2. We have seen his star in the east, rising in the east, I think, is in the King James Version. So it's not found rising in the east there. Okay, but regardless, I know what it was. In studying the commentary in regard to this, the "in the east" phrase was indicative of the way in which they referred to the sun as it appeared in the east. So maybe it rose. Maybe that was the idea. It came up from the east. And then it went ahead of them, chapter 2 and verse 9, and it stood over Bethlehem, and you know, how detailed do we get? It stood over where we were told stood over where the young child was. And that certainly was the city, or the town of Bethlehem. You know, how did it happen? Did they look straight up, kind of get right under it, and look down, and there Jesus was? I don't know. There's no way of knowing that for a certainty. But it was obviously a miraculous manifestation. Okay? So, keeping that in mind, there is one other point that we can kind of look at in this section before we get into some discussion, and that is the dream of the wise men. I want you to notice there are three times in the text to where Jesus actually, in a divine way, talks to individuals, and all three times in Matthew, the second chapter, we are told that he appeared in a dream. So, or that the divine instruction came from a dream. Verse 12, they divinely warned in a dream that they should not return to Herod, departed for their own country another way. And then we find also go back down to it, in verses 19 through 20 of the text, that when Herod was dead, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. And then finally in verse 22 of the text, when Archelaus was reigning in Judea instead of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned by God in a dream, turned aside into Galilee. So there are three times where that is mentioned, and it was all in the time of a dream. Okay, so with that in mind, what do we learn from this particular text? A couple of things, and the one that I want you to note is that Jesus is worthy of worship. The wise men from the east came for the express purpose, we are told, to worship him. Of course, we're told in verses 10 and 11 that when they came, they did worship him. And, of course, Herod's excuse, so that he would know where Jesus was, so that he could kill him, was to bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. The king of the Jews, worthy of worship, and that is, of course, because he was the Son of God. Okay, so with those things in mind, any questions, comments, anything that you want to add to the narrative in the discussion?
It's a bit of speculation that the star appeared when Jesus was born.
It is.
I wonder about that because, like, when I was little, like, I don't know, 8 or something, I imagine it happened right after the shepherds. Right? Jesus is born, shepherds come, they leave a few days later. So Magi show up, and they're like, hey, we saw the star. And later somebody said to me, well, it was multiple years, because why else would Herod kill all the babies and lead it up into toddlers? But it turns out that Herod didn't know. Herod asked him when the star appeared. He didn't ask him, was the star tied to the actual time of his birth? Maybe the star showed up before his birth, and it was giving them enough lead time such that they could get over there closer to the time. Because they were from Nazareth, right? They're in Nazareth. They came to Bethlehem for the census.
Yeah.
And then why stay there?
Was that where they were in Nazareth? I mean, I know they came to Bethlehem because of the census. I'd go over to Luke to see.
Isn't that over in Luke?
It's a Luke chapter. The interesting thing back was, and to note as part of all this, is that when they returned from Egypt after Herod's death, they returned and were coming back to Judah, which would be an indication possibly going back to Bethlehem until such time as they were warned not to because of Archelaus and went to Nazareth instead.
Maybe they moved to Judea. They're like, well, they're going to take the census, so we might as well move. They moved and they said not to.
Don't know. Back. Don't know.
But the point is, we don't know.
Don't know. That's right.
We know that Herod found out it had been about 2 years, and he's like, well, I don't know, but that's as good a number as any to balance my equation.
And I think that you could see also that he might think, okay, it seems like it's probably been a year, but I want to be sure. Because when you look at the nature of the type of person Herod was, I don't know if I mentioned that. Let me see if it's... I talk about that in the actual... Let me go back down to the second part. Yeah, talking about the children that were estimated to have lost their lives at Herod's hand, just to note something. We are told, as you go into history, that Herod murdered rivals to his throne. He murdered people in order to ascend to a position to where he was in favor with the Romans. He murdered his three oldest sons. He murdered all of his in-laws, as well as his wife, Mariam. And that was his favorite wife, by the way. So it wasn't his only wife, but his favorite wife, it said that he murdered her. So when it talks about the households as well of his rivals and the households of his in-laws, I mean, there's no telling how many people he murdered. So he wasn't an individual who was hesitant to murder for the sake of protecting his position and standing. Now, having said that, the city of Bethlehem was a small town. It was a town of probably about 500 at that time. And so how many children? If it were only male children, just an estimate that scholars kind of come up with, but they're about a dozen children. So it's not a you know, what you were thinking when you think of all the male children, okay, you know, hundreds of male children. No, it was a small number because of the small population. But it was every one of them. And he would have done whatever necessary to keep that position of power that he had. And
he was a thorough fellow. I mean,
yes, he was.
It even says it wasn't just Bethlehem, right? It was the surrounding area too.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we don't know for sure. It was sometime between his birth and the age of two, we would assume, just from what we find from the narrative that these events happened. Okay, so the other question that I had is chapter 2 and verse 3. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Anybody speculate as to why it was? We know why Herod was troubled, but why was it that all of Jerusalem was troubled? What was meant by that?
I'm just going to try and figure out myself, unless they just thought having a new king was going to change all of the whatever they wanted or
okay.
was used to.
Possibly. There's some of that. By the way, the word trouble does not necessarily indicate something negative. But the actual Greek word is an indication of excitement or being stirred up, which could be a positive thing rather than a negative thing, although obviously in Herod's case it was a negative thing, and possibly the context would indicate that as well. But it is kind of an interesting thing that that, you know, we know Herod, because he didn't have the favor of the people, he would be worried and do everything he could to consolidate his throne. But we're talking also about the religious leaders in Jerusalem that were aware of it, and Bethlehem was only 5 miles away. And it's kind of interesting to me that no effort was made on behalf of the leaders. And I recognize there were efforts that were made to kill Jesus, but if the Messiah that had been prophesied in the Old Testament were to be proclaimed as being born, that should be a cause of rejoicing in Israel. And it is kind of an interesting thing that the Jewish leaders made no effort to find out for themselves whether or not the Messiah had actually been born. They were stirred up about it, but the wise men are the ones that went to Jerusalem, the 5 miles away, rather than any of the Jewish leaders making that effort. There's a text in John chapter 5 in verses 38 through 40, where Jesus is talking about the religious leaders. And he tells them, he said, "You do not have his word abiding in you, because of whom he sent, him you do not believe. You search the scriptures, for in them you think you have eternal life, and these are they which testify of me, but you are not willing to come to me that you may have life." And so that certainly is something that is characteristic of the Jewish leaders throughout his ministry. But perhaps there was some of that even here as they got news of his possible birth, that they didn't have any interest in the Messiah because, again, of their position and what it might mean to them. And that became very obvious, of course, later on as he grew and as he began his ministry. Yes, Ben?
It's interesting, the time frame here in verse 3, where he's talking about what will happen. When Herod the king heard this, in other words, what he heard from those men, when he heard that, he was troubled, and then all Jerusalem with him, which occurred after that. So he caused a commotion. He tried to keep it a secret from talking to the wise men, you know, to the three wise men. But as soon as he called his counselors and told them, the word was spread. I have to wonder also the star itself. These three men who saw it in the east, it must have been a substantial sight. And if it was to them, it would have been to anyone who saw it. And people tend to be superstitious. As soon as they see something like that, if it was very bright and unusual and just appeared, which sounds like what it did, what's the star supernova, you know? That's one of the things they've called this thing. Then there was already talk about what this meant. And of course, as soon as those men showed up and Herod said what he was, and then the word spread, and everybody talking about the Messiah being born, like you just said.
Yeah.
I think you made an assumption there.
There is an assumption.
I don't think the Magi went to Herod.
Oh, well, that's not the assumption I'm talking about.
It says now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem,
the days of
Herod, the Magi showed up. My impression is they just showed up in town
and asked, yeah,
and started asking around.
Yeah. So they didn't necessarily go to Herod first.
And gathered the religious leaders and said, "Hey, where's this supposed to happen?" Then he went and talked to the Magi secretly.
So, well, yeah, and that's so. Those are the explain. Another thing to point out, though, is that people have been trying to explain how the star could have existed, and we don't have a record of it except in the Book of Matthew. You know, Luke doesn't talk about the star, and there's absolutely no extra biblical information about a star that can be, you know, nailed down at that particular time about some astronomical deal. And some have posited that possibly only the Magi could see it, only the wise men could see it. That's just one explanation that was given. But it is just to note the fact that there is not a definitive extra-biblical source that we could turn to explain or to refer to this to say, hey, there was some astrological phenomena that happened at this particular time. That doesn't necessarily mean anything one way or the other.
Justin's explanation is even better, because what that would mean is these men came into the town, they were asking everybody.
Yeah.
That's what spread the rumor.
Yeah. And if
the
star
through the whole city, and then it got to the
king. And they see the star, it definitely would be something. It would stir the people up at the very least. Okay.
If your murderous king is unhappy, ain't nobody happy.
There you go. Yeah, I can see that too. I don't know what they're going to do and what might happen to us. Okay, so let's go on to chapter 2, 13 through 18. Someone read that for me, please. 2, 13 through 18. Justin, would you mind doing it?
13 through 18.
Uh-huh.
And when they had gone, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him." So Joseph got up and took the child and his mother while it was still night and left for Egypt. He remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." Then when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he came, became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the Magi. Then what had been spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more.
Okay. All right, so, and we won't necessarily consistently do this, but I do want you to note that there were two prophecies that were fulfilled, as stated in verse 15 of the text, which is from... looks like Hosea 11:1, and then in verse 18 of the text from Jeremiah 31, that there are two prophecies fulfilled. And we do want to acknowledge those. And whenever we see this, we're building up a case for the legitimacy of the claim that Jesus was the Messiah with every single prophecy that was fulfilled in his lifetime. Some prophecies he had control of, other prophecies like these he had no control of. He was an infant at this time. And yet these things were done, and these prophecies were fulfilled. And when you take those prophecies fulfilled together, by the end of Matthew, you have a tremendous witness as to the legitimacy of the claim that Jesus was who he claimed to be, the Messiah of God. So, you know, you might, on the back of your notes, as you go through the chapters, whenever we come across a fulfilled prophecy, you may want to write that down, both the verse and also the reference to the Old Testament prophecy, so that can be seen. Which is interesting, because when we get down to the very end of the chapter with verse 23, "He shall be called a Nazarene." Notice that was spoken by the prophets numerous times. "He shall be called a Nazarene." What does that mean? Because that phrase, "he should be called Nazarene," is not found in any of the prophets. So we're going to explain what we believe is intended by that particular phrase in just a few moments. But let's go back to the text in chapter 2 and verses 13 through 18, excuse me. And this, of course, was the departure to Egypt. By the way, if anyone is interested, number one, Egypt, depending upon where they settled in Egypt, we have no knowledge of that. We're talking about a trip of 150 to 200 miles travel from the region of Jerusalem into Egypt southwest. At the time in which Jesus would have lived there, there were about 1 million Jews who were living in Egypt. It's estimated about 1 million Jews lived in Egypt at that particular time in history. Another interesting thing, though, again, Luke doesn't talk about the departure to Egypt. They say, well, Matthew's not accurate. You'll hear this time and again, modernists. Luke doesn't say there was a star, so Matthew made it up. Luke doesn't say that he went to Egypt, so Matthew made it up. It gets irritating. It happens so often when those things come up. But there are references in early Christian writings, as well as in the Jewish Babylonian Talmud, of charges that were raised against Jesus. So there were some Jews that were making the charges that the reason he could perform the miracles that he was performing is he learned magic while he lived in Egypt. And there are records, extra-biblical records, of those charges made. Now, of course, the charges themselves are ridiculous, but that could be construed as an extra-biblical source to indicate the truthfulness of Matthew's account that he did spend some time in Egypt while he was a child. So, just thought that was kind of an interesting thing. So, after he goes to Egypt, or in going to Egypt, there's one other thing that I just wanted to note, is just how dire the situation was. He was warned in a dream, And we are told, he said, get up, take the young child, his mother, and run to Egypt, flee to Egypt, and stay there till I tell you you can come back. He rose and took the young child and his mother by night. So that's the indication is, the dream, it appeared to him in a dream, he said, wake up and go. And he woke up and he went. So that was a dangerous time. Now, as far as the time frame, as to the as to what's going on here, you know, the Magi, they left another way, get out of here. Herod says, go kill the kids. I don't know how much time passed in regard to that, but it was an urgent situation. So they basically ran for their lives. And we're told that Herod became very angry as a result of that, because he was deceived by the wise men who obeyed the dictate of God and went back another way. They didn't go back to Herod as he had asked them to do. And so he put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem. And we talked about that already. And that's the second point that we had in our lesson, and that is the fact that's indicated throughout this entire chapter that evil men will do anything they possibly can in order to maintain and consolidate their power. It's something that we see throughout history, which is why you have to question whether that North Korean chairman is going to do what he says to do, because he's going to do whatever it is that he needs to do to keep his power. There's no doubt about that. He's evidenced that already, just like Herod did. That's why he can't be trusted. So that kind of thing is something that we can see in present day. We saw it in the past. We certainly saw it in the case of Herod. All right, so questions, comments about that section? And yes, yeah.
It's interesting to see Lewis Moore has a lesson revealing the types of Christ throughout the Bible, different foreshadowings of what's to come. And Moses,
yeah.
His life is just one big, huge being type of Christ. You have him being born out of Egypt and then being called out of Egypt to lead his brethren. You have the being hid as a child. You have the... All the young boys being killed, young babies being killed because of that birth, and so many other things. It's interesting to see that happen here.
A lot of parallels. Yeah, it's interesting. There have been several commentaries that I was looking through that made the same point: is that you see the typology there, how that he is an antitype. Christ is an antitype of Moses in these events, and that's a foreshadowing that you see in Moses' life. So that is an interesting point. Okay, so then the final section, which is verses 19 through 23. How are we doing with time? We've got a couple minutes. Someone read verses 19 through 23 for me. Jim, please.
Now when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise, take the young child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the young child's life are dead. Then he arose, took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea instead of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And being warned by God in a dream, he turned aside into the region of Galilee. And he came and dwelt in the city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, he shall be called the Nazarene.
Okay, now we don't have much time, so I'll try to get through some of this pretty quickly. Just to note, first of all, that Nazareth, which was a town in the southern part of Galilee, was about 50 miles north of Jerusalem. And you'll remember the question that Philip was asked by Nathanael in John chapter 1 and verses 45 and 46. When he found Nathanael, he said, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. By the way, because Nazareth was also a very small rural town, not many. A lot of Jesuses, but this indicated the Jesus that they're talking about, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael's question to him is, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And the explanation that I was given in regard to that is that because of its rural nature and because it was an insignificant town out in the middle of nowhere, that the urban Jew would hold a town like that somewhat in derision. And, you know, there are a bunch of ignorant people there. That's just possibly, at least in part, the idea that Nathanael, may not have been that, it may not have been derisive at all. But that's the one indication, because there's nothing really known about the reputation of Nazareth, because nothing actually is known about Nazareth. Nazareth is not mentioned in the Old Testament. Nazareth is not mentioned in the New Testament until here, and when you get farther on in the future, there's not much said about it either. It still exists. The city still exists. There's about 5,000 people there now, I think, from what I read. But at that time, it was pretty insignificant. Okay, so the question, two things. The people, Archelaus, if that's how it's pronounced, Archelaus, he was Herod's son. He had the same brutal character as his father, which is the reason why they were diverted from Judah to Galilee. And he actually, to show you an example, one Passover feast in Jerusalem, he was fearing an uprising and massacred 3,000 Jews. Killed 3,000 Jews because he was afraid of the uprising. He had heard something of an uprising, so he just massacred them. Which, by the way, is why his reign was cut short, because he only reigned for a few years. It was maybe 5 years, because in 6 AD, after that happened, Rome sent him away and replaced him. So, but that's the same. So there was reason for them to fear. Now, the only significant thing about this would be with regard to the phrase spoken by the prophets. And I'm just going to give you what I've read in this regard, is that the town Nazareth, and the idea of he should be called a Nazarene, that Nazar, that root word there, was a very common word. And there are actually two roots that it could be one of the two, but the probable one is that it means separated, and could easily indicate that Nazareth was a remote town, so it was separated in that sense. But it was typically used in Hebrew literature to reference something separated as holy. In other words, the Nazar term was one that we would refer to as an indication of sanctification. So he shall be called a Nazarene. There's actually not a phrase in any particular prophecy. But the interesting thing is that when you look at all of these terms, notice in verse 5, for example, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, singular. And it's a reference to a specific prophecy. Go down to verse 15. He was there till the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken to the Lord through the prophet, saying, out of Egypt I called my son. But here it says it was spoken by the prophets that he shall be called a Nazarene. And so the best explanation that I can give you in that reference, since we can't go to the Old Testament, is that the reference is used that he shall be Nazar. He shall be separated as holy. He will be the Holy One. And that sentiment is all through the prophets concerning the Messiah as being the Holy One of God. And so that's the probable inference that is found in this particular text. Not that that was a fulfillment of a single prophecy given in the book of Amos or something like that, but rather it is a reference to the character of Jesus, and that there was a play on words here. That yes, he's from Nazareth, he's a Nazarene. Yes, he is separated as holy, and that's what the prophets have spoken of. And so that would be the.
Well, how come they say, well, could anything good come out of Nazareth?
Well, again, there are a couple of possibilities, but the primary one that is explained is that Nathanael was expressing a contempt for the town. And the only thing that we would know about a reason for the contempt, because we don't have enough information about Nazareth, was there a bunch of bad people there or what, is just that it was an insignificant town. So, you know, this is can anything good come out of this spot in the road? You know, it's like, there's nothing there. And you're saying that's where the Messiah is coming from. So that may have been the reason for the question. You know, we've done this two times. We've gotten through two chapters with absolutely no time left. But I think we pretty much covered everything. Yeah, everything. Thank you. So chapter 3 next week. Fill out your handout.